Welcome back to Mugs in the Morning. We are so pleased to have as our guest now in studio the latest addition to the political fray. He is David Hibner, and he's running for the U.S. House of Representatives 3rd District, a district which has elected Adrian Smith, I think, for 6 terms now. But David Hibner is with us, going to challenge a longtime guy from Western Nebraska, huh?
That's right, Corey. Thank you for having me today. We're off and we're running. We kicked everything off on Friday.
Before I asked you, before we get into the particulars of what led you to throw your hat in the ring, as they say, and get involved in this and run for Congress, I think most people recognize the Hibner name around here. You are from here originally, is that correct?
Yes, sir, yeah. Five generations on the Hibner side and 6 generations on the Griffith side. So our family's been in Lincoln County in Western Nebraska for a long time. Proud to say that, and this is my home, and I love it here. This is truly one of the best places to raise a family out of all of my national and international travels.
Mm-hmm. And you worked for Border Patrol for a while. So what was that like?
That was great. I was there for well over half of a career. And I did a little bit of everything from drug interdiction to tracking human footprints through 20,000 acre ranches in the middle of the night. And you never know who those footprints are going to belong to. They could be cartel dope smugglers, or they could be Middle Eastern terrorists. And they were both the times. It's a real thing down there.
Was this during the first Trump administration?
Yeah, I started at the end of the George W. Bush admin. Okay. And and then I ended up just at the beginning of the Joe Biden administration.
Okay.
So the pendulum swung back and forth for the Border Patrol. And
so about 20 years or so then?
For me, it was just shy of 13 years.
Okay.
13, yep.
Okay.
And so it was, I'd say it like this. It's a 40-year border war that's been politically neglected. It was the number one agenda item for voters last fall. That's the number one thing they wanted President Trump to solve. And he's on it, he's doing it, and they're finding innovative solutions to help out. But I think people just want normalcy down there. I know from being in it and seeing it, that's got to happen. It can't continue. We've got to win that thing and move forward.
So you've been on the battle line, so to speak, and know what that's all about. It seems like from looking at your website, you're totally on board with what the Trump administration is doing, and obviously brought in a hat, the MAGA hat there. And
that's right, yeah.
While it has, for some people despise it, but I think what it stands for is pretty apparent and has become more apparent since he got reelected last November, what he wants to do for this country. And I like politicians that, you know, they're not holding their finger up to the wind every day saying, how does the public feel about it? But they stand for something, and he knows in his mind, he knows what's going to benefit the country, and he does everything he can to make that happen.
That's right.
You sound to be, you know, kind of like along that, cut out of that same cloth.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
People crave and long for boldness. They're tired of lukewarm politicians.
Yeah.
They want motivated, proactive leadership. And that's the way it's supposed to be. It's become something that nobody likes. Congress has an 18% approval rating. I mean, that's awful. In the real world, they wouldn't hold a job with that kind of performance. So supporting President Trump is a big, big part of my platform. And I'm happy to see the unification and national momentum in that regard. We've got to be a team of horses pulling in the same direction. Or the internal squabbling will eat us alive, right? So let's use that advantage and let's get some stuff done for once.
And you want to join that, certainly. What, you know, what was it that really kind of gets you to cross that line and say, I'm sure you thought about, you know, running for Congress for quite a while now, but what was the determining factor? Was it a single event, or was it just something you didn't see getting done by our current representative in the 3rd District that prompted you to say, you know, I'm going to go for it, you know?
Well, it's the totality of the circumstances. It's a lot of things. The biggest thing that has driven me has been just the mediocrity. And I would challenge everyone to jump on Google and take a look at the current rep's record. See what it's like. Do your research. But the hardworking folks out here in the 3rd District, 80 counties, really, farmers, ranchers, industry, gun manufacturers, we've got so many great folks out here. And when you compare him to those folks, he doesn't come from the same cloth, in my opinion. I don't see him as my representative. He doesn't look like me when I look in the mirror. And so I want to get somebody that's in agriculture in there. I'm a proud ag producer, a small business owner, and I've served my country in uniform. And those are all feathers I can put in my hat that he does not.
Okay, so it's kind of just the totality of what you've seen and things that maybe he hasn't stood for that you thought he should take a stronger stance on.
Let's get some work done. Yeah, let's get some work done. As an example, 2 weeks ago in the Ways and Means Committee, our current rep was very lukewarm on some gun rights issues. And gun rights issues are so incredibly important to Western Nebraska and to Americans. And I don't want to see that as a constituent. I haven't met anyone that does want to see that. So who are you pleasing? Mm-hmm. Are you pleasing Washington, or are you pleasing the 3rd District of Nebraska?
Yeah.
When you show that timidness on common sense gun rights issues. So that's a big one for me, and I'll definitely attack it. But I think I can inject some of that Nebraska work ethic into the mold here.
Yeah, pretty clear. And I go back to your website. You got fight, fight, fight. Nebraska deserves a leader who will fight for them in the halls of Congress. Motivated leadership. Complacency is no longer an option. Mediocrity is not acceptable to David and his fellow Nebraskans. And then you got some videos below. But a large part, I sense a large part of what drives you is your Christian faith.
It absolutely is. And I'm very, very proud of that and unashamed. Christ is King, and that's it. It's very simple. Christ.
You've got that section on your website there. Yeah.
Yes, and I will take that to Washington. I will say that every chance I get. Jesus Christ died for my sins, and I'm not a perfect man, but I can carry that good message, and I can use those qualities, use those things to help build a good legislative platform, and use those as a compass when I'm there. Because as folks may not know, I lived and worked there for several years before I moved home, and Washington is a tough town, a very tough town. On so many different levels, it will eat your lunch and come back for more. You've got to be tough.
A lot of pressure to compromise, isn't there?
There is. There is. Mm-hmm. There's statistics out there about lobbyists and special interests. And there's genuine evil. When we're talking about our Christian faith, good versus evil, there's genuine evil that goes on behind the scenes. You've got to be sure of yourself, sure of your faith, and sure of what you stand for before you go up there. And if you don't, your doors are going to be blown off, and you're going to find yourself wallowing around in mediocrity. Mm-hmm. And the pioneer spirit, the strong folks out here are not okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned you're an ag producer, so a big background in that and being part of five generations that have been in this area. How does that benefit you and if people vote for you and you get elected, how would that benefit Nebraska and the 80 counties that you would represent having that background?
It's huge. Somebody with skin in the game, their financial well-being, their livelihood, and what they're going to give to their children and grandchildren. An ag producer works their whole lives, usually just by themselves and their kids. Sometimes they're lucky enough to have a helper or two. But they spend a whole life, more than a 20-year corporate career. They work 60, 70 years, 80 years, and it's a big deal to them. So having skin in the game in that regard also guides my decisions up there as well. And that's really a safeguard for the people that would vote for me. They know I'll lean toward things that will benefit Nebraska farmers and ranchers because it's not only in their interest, but it's in my interest and my kids' interest. Mm-hmm. To come out with a good deal wherever I can.
So what would be your focus as far as things, agriculture, you'd probably try to get on the agriculture committee, I imagine, and be involved in that. But what would be, to narrow it down, what would you really be focusing on for this area?
There's so much work to be done there. The beef labeling is a huge one. And that has been an absolute thorn in the side of every producer from cow-calf to the finishers and the feedlots. And so we've got a problem there. And we cannot get the lobbyists out of the way to get USA, product of USA, on those labels. And it just is
seems
astounding.
Like a pretty simple thing. But
it's so simple.
Impediment.
Right. If you go to the grocery store and you look at some ground beef or steak tonight, and it says USDA inspected, it does not mean USA raised. It could be a Brazilian steak that came up here on a ship, floated into a port in New Jersey. They unload it on a dock. They slaughter the cattle there so they can stamp it USDA inspected. That's such a difference. So we got to get USA labeling on those products, not just for our domestic use and our pride and knowing what we're eating, but for the export, the export value. But here's where I take it a step further. Let's get state of origin on there. A Nebraska steak is far superior to a Connecticut steak. I don't know anybody that goes to the grocery store.
We think so anyway, but Nebraska steaks are now all over the world.
Exactly. So when Governor Pillen or former Governor Ricketts goes on trade missions with a lot of these great ranchers and farmers, they end up in Japan, for example. Yep. They love Nebraska beef. They don't love American beef per se. They do, but they love Nebraska beef. They want to put that on their menu in Tokyo or wherever it may be. So why can't we get that on the label or work toward getting that on the label so Nebraska ranchers and farmers that supply the feed for that beef so they can get a better return on their products? They essentially make more. So if you sell those products internationally, they're basically commanding a premium over a Nevada steak or a Michigan steak. So I've never seen that in a menu in my travels. We're proud to serve a steak from Georgia or something. And they've got great beef all over the country. But Nebraska's got the best grass, the best water, and the best feed. And
we're a little biased, but I think with good reason.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
We're known as the beef state for a reason.
Right.
And we earned that reputation. Yeah.
So that's obviously a passion of mine. I want to drive that one home and really just get under the skin of folks that are in the way of that. Let's get that done. Let's just push it as far as we can and get it there and not quit. We can't quit on those things. Mm-hmm. Those things are important. So that's a top item, and mm-hmm. And so far people love the idea. I mm-hmm. mean, how can you not? That's something that we're proud of, but something that we really have that we can offer mm-hmm. nationally and internationally.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with David Hibner, and he has made an announcement recently that he's running against Adrian Smith next spring in the primary election for Nebraska's 3rd district. The winner of that goes on to the general election next fall, the fall of 26. And a lot of good things you mentioned, fighting for egg producers foremost among those. What are some other things you want to concentrate on if you get elected and go to Washington to represent us?
Well, aside from the ag, we got to protect our families. So any legislation that will protect our families from some of these ugly things we've seen in the media that are contrary to traditional families, I'm all for. And I've said this before as well, that traditional families are the answer to this national mess. We need good folks having good families to win this thing. And that's plain and simple. It's like, I know it may sound mundane. It's not some radical new idea, but it doesn't need to be. We need to be good at blocking and tackling mm-hmm. to win the football game. We need to be good at the basics. And that's what government's supposed to do. It's supposed to be good at the basics and not chasing radical agenda items like the Green New Scam, as President Trump calls it,
yep.
and I agree with, and some of these other ridiculous things we've seen in the last 4 years to 14 years. It's really been going on for a while.
Yeah, it just accelerated the 4 years before President Trump got back. I know you're totally on board with his agenda and all that. It would have to mean a lot if you're able to join with that too. We have a flank, or what other people refer to as the ultra conservatives or religious conservatives, Christians. In Congress, I know that too, and I follow that, and I believe everything they're for. When it comes to like getting legislation through, I think some people are a little bit reluctant to elect people that hold those type of viewpoints because mm-hmm. they're viewed as maybe they'll hold up legislation that may be mostly good, but not all good.
Right.
And you've seen, I'm sure you followed, bills in Washington that
yes.
they have a lot of good stuff in them,
yes.
but yet they have some destructive stuff in them. Where would you come down on that if you met a bill that you liked a lot of it, but yet there were some things holding you back,
that's,
they have thrown in?
Yeah, that's a really good point and question. Someone asked me that recently. Would you hold up Congress on a continuing resolution? And every situation is unique. And generally speaking, I'm looking for being a motivated conservative leader. But you got to work together. And I don't think it's in our nation's, not just our district, but in the whole nation's best interest to hold up something for one guy, to hold up funding the government for months, up to a year. When I was in the Border Patrol, I experienced that. We had to work. The paycheck stopped. It's Christmas time. And you're still going in on your midnight shifts. You still have to hold the thin green line, and you still have to do your job. And so you got to take care of your people. So with the CR, you gotta look at it, and you got to make a wise decision. You take care of your people, but you do have to address the long-term issues. So it's twofold. It's like triaging a patient. If somebody's injured, you triage the most necessary bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a femoral artery bleeding, you stop that before you worry about prepping the person for head surgery if they have a head injury.
Right.
Right. So we got to do things in the right order. Everything's unique. But generally, I want to work with everybody to achieve those things. I don't want to be a heel dragger, but I'm absolutely not going to be a yes man, right? You got to scrutinize everything as uniquely as they are, because every situation is different. But yeah, it's very important to achieve common ground as conservatives, especially while we have the House, the Senate, and the White House. And 2028 is coming quick. Look at me, I'm already running for 2026. Yep. People have probably woken up and said, why are we running for 2026 already? Didn't the election just happen a few months ago? But time moves fast, and we've got to use that time for good.
One of the things I remember when Coach Osborne went to Congress, and I'm sure you remember this vividly as well, that he made a big point of saying, nobody's bought my vote, political action committees, lobbyists, that sort of thing. And from what I've heard from you so far, I'm guessing you're not going to be beholden to anyone in the way you vote. You
can
vote the way you believe is right for what's best for the area and the country.
Exactly. And so that's a good point. I've had, since I filed with the FEC, you wouldn't believe the phone calls a guy gets.
I probably would, but
you probably would. You probably would, but it's leadership should not be a living. It should not be a profession. And there are so many leeches out there trying to suck blood from political candidates. And it's a system that's been set up for a while. What I can definitely say is, every financial contribution that I get is something that I watch very closely. I'm not shelling money out to a lobbyist firm in D.C. That wants X amount, thousands and thousands of dollars to run a campaign. I can run my own campaign. Why would I put somebody in the middle there just to fund their lifestyle up there? Mm-hmm. So I take that really seriously, and that every donation is tough, especially these days for folks. And I want them to know that I'm going to take care of those. And I won't be giving that money away to consultants and all these guys that need to get out there and get real jobs. But there are a lot of seagulls out there, I call them.
No doubt.
So, yeah, you got to watch your Doritos on the beach, because those guys are definitely starting to form.
Looking to swoop in if you show any vulnerability at all, for sure. Kind of wrap this up with a summary statement of what David Hibner's all about and what people will get if they choose you over who you're running against.
Well, you're going to get a non-politician, right? I'm not a politician. I consider myself a servant leader. In the Border Patrol, I was honored to supervise many different programs and hundreds of people. And the best way to lead another human being is to do the work with them. It's to know what you're doing, and it's to get down and get dirty in the trenches with the guys and do it with them. Don't tell them to go clean the restroom if you're not willing to do it first. So a servant leader is what you're going to get. A politician is not part of the equation. And I'm going to take those core values of faith, family, and patriotism. Really the traditions that the 3rd District in Western Nebraska hold dear. And I'm going to take those to Washington and inject energy and motivation, right? We need a guy that's used to getting up in February during a snowstorm all night long, every 20 minutes, and you slug out there in your bibs and you walk through all the calves and you make sure that everything is safe and that nothing is going wrong. And if there is, you take care of it on a moment's notice. And they should trust me as a guy that's been alone on the border, crawling into a group of 30 people that may or may not be armed and making arrests by myself an hour from backup. And so I'm going to take that motivation, that restlessness, that quest for a better product from our representation. I'm going to take that forward and work very hard to deliver for this district.
Okay. I think you've laid it out there pretty clear for folks listening. And David Hibner has been our guest this morning. He is going to be running next spring against Adrian Smith for Nebraska's 3rd Congressional District. Thanks so much for dropping by the studios today.
Thank you, Corey. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Best of luck to you. Okay.
Thank you, sir.